Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
There will be enormous growth of the infrastructure, but both on the centralized crypto exchanges and the crypto OTC market.
Of course, the topic of the day, when you see me and Anton, what do you think it's going to be? Of course, it's going to be Bitcoin and the milestone approval of these ETFs. We've all been very excited with this launch, whether we think of it as institutionalizing Bitcoin or we disapprove of it because it's against decentralization. It doesn't matter. I want to welcome Anton and congratulate you, Anton, for keeping us abreast of all the developments in the market.
Yeah, thanks very much, Effie. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And I think today we'll have such an awesome discussion because something very big happened just recently, a big milestone for the whole industry. And I'm super excited and super happy to talk to you about this, the Spot Bitcoin ETF. So can't wait.
Yeah. So we're looking to the West, to US capital markets. That's definitely a milestone for those markets. How do you see it? You see it as a milestone in what?
So I would say is that the approval of Spot Bitcoin ETF has been the biggest achievement of the crypto industry in the last 10 years. So just to make it very outrageous, the first Spot Bitcoin ETF application was done by Winklevoss Twins back in 2013. That never happened. 10 years later, or a bit more than 10 years later, we have the Spot Bitcoin ETF approval, and this will be a huge driver of mainstream and institutional adoption of Bitcoin and crypto industry in general. So I'm super excited about it. For the first time ever, the biggest financial market in the world, which is the US financial market, has a way to invest into Bitcoin in a safe, secure, and regulated way. We cannot stress how important that achievement is. And I think, you know, we can all congratulate ourselves. There were some key people behind it who made it happen. And finally, we are there. So big congratulations to the whole crypto industry.
Interesting.
Okay. And actually, what do you think about this event? I know you're a Wall Street veteran, so I want to hear from the Wall Street veteran about how you see the Spot Bitcoin ETF.
Well, two thoughts in mind. One, this milestone, again, confirms the hegemony, the dominance of U.S. capital markets globally. These are markets that are dominated by institutional investors, be it, you know, the public equity markets or not. And we have to remind ourselves that this is very different compared to the Chinese and Eastern capital markets. They are dominated by retail and not institutional investors. So let's not forget that it's a qualitative difference that matters a lot. So as you said, now it's more that institutional investors will have the opportunity to easily invest in this asset. And the way I've been thinking, what does this really mean? Although, as you said, we've been waiting so many years to see if it will happen. I should have, you know, crystallized my thinking earlier, but it just dawned on me that suddenly we have a non-bankable asset become bankable in the traditional way. Because Bitcoin, up until yesterday in the US, for US institutional investors specifically, was non-bankable. They couldn't access it, right? And now they have that. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out, how it affects the ETPs, you know, that we have, and the AMCs, all the actively manage certificates here in Europe mainly, whether that will affect them, slow down, you know, the growth in that market. But all in all, I would say that's what I'm thinking. We have a non-bankable asset that now is really bankable.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So a conversation, I would like to drive it towards what's important. We have a non-bankable asset, and traditionally, non-bankable or alternative assets, and Bitcoin, you know, these ETFs are in the alternative asset class. Mm-hmm. Typically, they're not liquid, right, in our traditional world. But this one is liquid. So it has an awesome attribute to it that we've never seen before. So my question is, we need to think about liquidity. How will the success of this ETF market that's just been born, and let's think in the horizon of 2 or 3 years or 3 to 5 years, right? If it's successful, what will it do to the liquidity of the underlying? You have a much deeper understanding as a co-founder of BlockTech, a liquidity provider, being in the crypto markets with, as a co-founder of Leakey. I mean, you've been there in very deep and involved ways. And I'd like your thoughts on liquidity of the underlying on-chain, how it may affect liquidity on centralized exchanges, DEXs. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So first, what I want to make a very strong statement is that spot Bitcoin ETF will actually provide an enormous amount of liquidity coming into the crypto native markets. And that liquidity will be in the orders of magnitude of tens and hundreds of billions of dollars over a long time period. And that will actually have humongous impact on the crypto markets. And if we have to actually reflect kind of to understand how that will play out, we need to look at something very similar as an asset, and that's gold. So gold, when it was actually approved for the first ETF that actually had gold as an underlying, over the next couple of years and decades, we had an enormous amount of capital coming in, and then capital also actually supported building of the infrastructure that would enable this flow of capital coming into the gold market. The gold market is very specific because most of the gold trading is actually between the banks. So the infrastructure that was built to support the liquidity inflows into the gold market was reserved for the interbank market. If we actually want to reflect how that will play out for Bitcoin, what I actually anticipate is that there will be enormous growth of the infrastructure, but both on the centralized crypto exchanges and the crypto OTC markets. Okay. The reason why that will happen is because investors who invest through spot Bitcoin ETF, they want to be sure that they get the best possible execution. And the prime brokers and the traders and the service providers that want need to provide that execution, they will look across whole spectrum of trading venues, be that automated market makers, centralized exchanges, or decentralized exchanges, to get the most volume at the best price. So I actually anticipate that there will be enormous amount of venture capital coming into the OTC markets, centralized exchanges, automated market makers, decentralized exchanges, to actually take advantage of all of that liquidity coming in and capturing the flow that wants to get the best possible execution. So this is from an infrastructure perspective. From now to kind of anticipate how that will look like for the institution investors, but also everyday investors. This, the inflows and the capital and liquidity that's coming into the crypto space will be enormous over the next couple of years, and it will result in a massive price appreciation, which will make, you know, a lot of people who have been involved in the crypto space for a very long time as the winners of this approval of the spot Bitcoin ETF. So I'm highly bullish on a lot of liquidity coming in. Infrastructure will be approved. We can reflect and think of gold markets or gold ETF as an analogy for how that happened. But billions of liquidity are coming in, and we're all going to benefit from that.
Anton, when the ETFs were approved, I had the question, and I was wondering if in the documentation there were any restrictions in terms of where these issuers, BlackRock and VanEck and all those issuers, are allowed to source their Bitcoins, whether there were any restrictions that they have to go to centralized exchanges or whatever. But I inquired at 21 Shares, which is one of the issuers with ARK, and they clarified to me that no, there are no restrictions. The restrictions are the KYT, know your transaction kind of processes that they're obliged to follow. So they can go, as you already mentioned, on the OTC market, whether that is centralized or decentralized, which I found quite intriguing. And I think that some of the platforms like Vanguard that is refusing for now to list these ETFs will change their mind going down the road, and they will come back and say, oh, you know, now that we are confident that everything is working well and that the underlying is not, you know, dirty Bitcoins or fake Bitcoins and so on, now we can get involved because it was our fiduciary duty to our clients to protect them and so on. Sometimes it's in the details that you have to look into and see where the value is and how things work behind the scenes to understand how the market will develop, right?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And we talked now a lot about liquidity coming in. So Effie, what kind of benchmarks actually do you look at when you will evaluate the success of Spot Bitcoin ETF?
Well, I mean, we've been glued the first days to see if there's liquidity and how much money has come in. But I think a longer-term perspective is required here. And one of the things that I'm looking at is, what is the market capitalization today of Bitcoin? Let's call it in the range of 800 to 900 billion, right? And if we looked at the main institutional market in the U.S., which is the 401k market, right? The pensions in the U.S., that's a $6 trillion market. If we assume that 1% is allocated to this alternative asset, which is not an outrageous number, that would be $600 billion. So with today's current prices, in my opinion, that is too big a percentage of the Bitcoin market. We're talking $600 billion invested into a market that is a $900 billion market cap. But if we look at it over a 2 or 3 year horizon, what is the percentage of that market that would be a healthy percentage? I think that we shouldn't see more than 20% going in that market. Because if it does, meaning if more than 20% of the Bitcoin market cap, which might become, you know, 5 trillion or 10 trillion, whatever it becomes, if it's locked in 401k plans, that's not a healthy market. It is not a rich market. It reminds me a bit like when we were trading treasury bonds in the US, and we used to talk about the fact that the offer they're on treasuries disappear, there's no liquidity, you know, bank buys them and you never see them again and so on. We don't want that to happen to Bitcoin. So again, the percentage of how much bit of these ETFs is, if you want, booked or held in these 401k plans that are not traded, right? They are hodlers more than anybody else. They would be of this alternative asset. That's one of the metrics that I like to look at. And it gives us a level of, you know, what's the ceiling, if you want, what to expect. What are you hearing in the market in terms of the sort of projected flows for this year at least. What is it? 20 billion, 50 billion? What are you hearing?
Yeah. So there was a very good research done by Galaxy, which is one of the biggest players in the crypto industry, that estimated that over the next 3 years, which is a long enough period to kind of make an objective estimate, that some about $40 billion of liquidity will flow through the US capital markets, through the advisors, through the 401ks, the pension plans will flow into the crypto markets. It is a massive number, actually, because you and I as traders know that the price is set on the margin. So that means actually we don't need to have $1 trillion of liquidity to come into the crypto markets to add $1 trillion to the market capitalization. So this, want to point out that this $40 billion of liquidity that's estimated to come into the spot Bitcoin ETFs is massive and is expected to increase the price by several multiples over the period of the next 3 years. If you look at the short-term time horizon, so in the first week or first few days of trading, we see actually that less than $1 billion came in of capital into the spot Bitcoin ETFs, which is not the record, but the volume that was traded with the spot Bitcoin ETFs on the first day was the record in the whole financial history. So I think that gives an optimism that there's a lot of interest to trade Bitcoin. Some are fundamental as capital inflows. Some are more speculative or arbitrage based as the one related to the Grayscale spot Bitcoin ETF. But the volume and the liquidity coming in is extremely positive. This is a great sign and the future is very bright.
Yes, having said that, now I want to tease you, Anton, because obviously, you know, this is a traditional wrapper, right, of an alternative asset whose principles include self-sovereignty. And what does self-sovereignty mean? It means keeping your Bitcoins in your non-custodial wallet and, you know, all the memes that we all know, not your keys, not your crypto, and so on. I'm very interested to see what is your opinion of the effect of a successful, eventually, Bitcoin ETF market in the US capital markets on non-custodial wallets. We've seen them grow. We count non-custodian wallets in the millions and the users and so on, whatever the correct way to count them is. Will it kill that growth of non-custodial wallets?
So at the moment, we have actually extreme concentration risk when it comes to custodian of the spot Bitcoin ETF. The biggest and the number one custodian at the moment is actually Coinbase. For 10 service providers who launched the spot Bitcoin ETF. And only one issuer of the spot Bitcoin ETF, which is Fidelity, is doing self-custody, meaning they are the custodian of their own spot Bitcoin ETF. So this custody risk is actually very much aware in the whole crypto industry. And I actually anticipate that very soon we will see more custodians being added among the issuers of the spot Bitcoin ETF, meaning that many will add alternatives. And I think many will do self-custody as well, because self-custody is actually one of the key features of the crypto industry. So I'm highly optimistic and highly bullish that there will be a diversification among the custody risk. Having said that, I don't think this will be an easy process, because the regulator might actually have additional plans. So the US regulator, the SEC, was very hostile to the crypto industry so far, was very unwilling to approve the spot Bitcoin ETF for a long time. And I don't think that SEC will be very willing to make changes to the spot Bitcoin ETF in the near future. So on one side, I'm conflicted because people will want to actually exercise their human rights towards self-custody. On the other side, I'm sure that the US regulator will have different plans. But having said that, decentralization is the biggest innovation of the crypto industry. Self-custody is at the core of that decentralization, and it's our job as the crypto industry to nurture that value and worked long-term towards enabling and self-custody and having it as a dominating solution, even when it comes to spot Bitcoin ETF. So I'm optimistic and pessimistic at the same time, but I would love to hear, you know, thoughts from you. You're on Wall Street. You have been there for many years. You know how the game works. And you're also very knowledgeable of the crypto industry. How do you see that happening? Because we want to exercise our value of decentralization. And is this even feasible, you know, you having decades of experience on the Wall Street?
Well, as you said, the culture on Wall Street is a culture that wants everything in-house, prefers things in-house. So if there was an easy way for all these issuers to have self-custody, they would do it. But of course, at this point, it doesn't make sense because it's not clear to them if this is a successful and profitable business. We have 11 issuers. Who knows if all of them will survive in the sense that the fees are not fat fees of alternative investment vehicles, even though this is clearly an alternative investment in a portfolio, you know, allocation, but it doesn't have fat margins. So it's difficult for these entities to go down that route immediately unless they gather enough assets and they establish themselves. I think then we will have that notion. And I totally agree with you with Coinbase that it is a single point of failure in this industry. I'm also concerned about dampening the growth of non-custodial wallets for retail. Because let's not forget that the crypto market has been traditionally a retail market first, right? It was a bottom-up revolution and not an institutional one like other, if you want, the digital asset revolutions, be it cloud or other infrastructure, if you want. So if you look at Bitcoin and other cryptos as infrastructure, which it is infrastructure, right? Here, it was a bottom-up infrastructure adoption rather than an enterprise first. And then, you know, cloud was the other way around. It was enterprise, and now it's me and you, right? So let's not forget that direction of travel because it matters like history matters, where it came from. And it will be interesting for us to see how the issuance of these ETFs will affect, in a positive way, I suspect, the development of this infrastructure. Will it put more pressure, a good pressure, on the two big ones, the Bitcoin infrastructure and the Ethereum infrastructure, as we probably expect an ETF for Ethereum, to develop and compete and evolve more, which is a great thing. And it might be, you know, an odd fact that we are institutionalizing this infrastructure, but it has this domino effect or ripple effect to make the community, the decentralized community, even more feverish to develop, you know, the underlying. I don't know your opinion on this.
So, wow, Effie, I think you make a very good point because you look one step ahead. So we know we have the spot Bitcoin ETF, but you're also thinking about the next step. And it's clear that the next step is the spot Ethereum ETF and many others after that, which all have different thesis. They all have different origins and they all have a different narrative. So Bitcoin, for everybody who is not crypto native, is your digital gold. Ethereum is your world computer, your world decentralized computer. And now when we talk about wallets and custody in those two very different worlds, I think also you make a very good point and you understand that there are natively different optimal solutions, especially, for instance, when it comes to Ethereum, but also other chains like Definity, Polkadot, and so on. So I think you make a very good point. And now you really sparked my imagination, to be honest, because I'm now thinking how that future will look like. But I completely agree with you. This is going to be a massive fight. The Wall Street wants to centralize everything, if possible, because of the fees and because of the control. The regulator also wants to centralize things because of the control, not so much because of the fees, because of their underlying business. But the understanding in the crypto community is that decentralization is actually the way forward, because it also reduces risks. So I think you make a very good point. I would love that in the future we'd all do self-custody, because actually this is the optimal way from the upside, but also from the risk perspective. But I see this as a massive fight, and you know, it's not going to be easy shooting there, let's say it like this.
But it's an evolution, right? I mean, there's no absolute centralization and absolute decentralization that, you know, works. It's a question of degrees. And at the end of the day, it's an evolution of governance, corporate governance, whatever governance, cultures and processes we adopt. And I think the genie is out of the bottle. We are open, and there is a fight, an invisible fight, which is around the mistrust in the current governance structures that we have developed at the corporate level, at the societal level, and so on. And then, you know, it goes obviously for money and everything, because it's similar. So we get into, it's not a philosophical discussion. It's a very real discussion, and it's like a pendulum swinging. We are in that roller coaster, right, Anton? Mm-hmm. I feel that we're going up and down. Okay, let's move decentralized, and then there's this force that is pulling us to centralized and so on. But that's how we move, right? We overshoot yes. a bit, we come lower, but we are moving in that direction.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I really like that we talked about not only about the upside of Bitcoin ETFs, but we talked about the risks. But really, let's go now to extreme risks. So, Effie, what black swans do you envision, anticipate, or predict for the Bitcoin ETFs? And where do you see, you know, catastrophic events potentially happening?
Well, the first is, you already mentioned the absolute concentration risk of these ETFs, because Coinbase is the sole custodian of all of them except Fidelity. That, for me, is a black swan risk, and it can happen basically because of cybersecurity, some cybersecurity attack that is unmanageable, and we all know of the ironic cybersecurity attack of the Twitter handle of the SEC just the day of the announcement. But imagine if we have a cybersecurity issue with Coinbase, that is really a major black swan event in the ETF space that would be really very bad for our industry. I think for me, that's the biggest operational risk. And I always say, we know anybody that's been in capital markets and in the trading business, that all crises are liquidity crises. And liquidity is also linked with operational risks, right? Because you can have a liquidity black swan event with huge network effects because of some operational risk. And there's a higher possibility in these crypto markets. So I'm concerned about that more than anything else. What about you? Is there anything, another black swan nightmare that has crossed your mind? Or you're still in euphoria?
Yeah. So I'm definitely still in the euphoria. But now I was thinking about it when you were talking about black swan events, you know, and me being a trader and me being a market maker, I remembered one black swan that happened in 2010. That was the May 6th flash crash, where the whole US markets collapsed within a couple of minutes and crashed the most in history in the fastest time period. So if I have to think about liquidity, risks coming from different verticals, but then spilling over into the market, if I would have to say a black swan in the crypto space, but that would impact all of the financial markets, I think there is a high risk that we have a extremely fast price crash in the crypto markets due to the lack of liquidity or vanishing liquidity. And that then that crash as a on a correlation basis impacts the rest of the financial markets, equity markets, bond market, tech stock market, gold market, and so on. Because as you remember, or I remember as well, the May 6th flash crash impacted all of the markets. So it originated in the equity and the futures markets in the US, but dragged down gold, dragged down treasury, dragged down a lot of other liquid asset classes within a very short time period. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have like a June a flash crash, you know, in 2024 or 2025, within a couple of minutes, you know, the crypto markets drags the other markets. And just to say, I mean, I can tell you as a market maker, I have seen flash crashes in the crypto space on a not daily basis, but weekly basis.
On a regular basis.
Yeah. And these things happen.
Yeah. And Anton, I want to circle back to what I said initially about thinking of the Bitcoin ETF allocation as an alternative, as part of your alternative asset allocation, whether you're a retail investor or mostly as an institutional investor. And yes, it is a liquid underlying asset, which is a positive compared to other alternative assets. However, it is prone to flash crashes, and that is an idiosyncrasy that one should be aware about that does not exist in the other alternative assets, be it, you know, real estate or infrastructure or private credit or whatever, because they are illiquid, so you don't have flash crashes. Here it's liquid, and you have flash crashes because of the decentralized, the liquid nature of it. And it's early days. These OTC markets are what they are, and we don't really model correctly or don't understand the effects. Although we know, we do have lessons from other huge OTC markets like the derivatives market, and we can draw conclusions.
Let me just add, when it comes to flash crashes, because I studied actually and worked for the government to analyze the May 6th flash crash in 2010.
Which was what, 50%?
It was massive. It was on some market, it was 99% in individual equities. But on the futures market and the Spider S&P 500 ETF, it was around 15% actually, you know, yeah. The minimum value actually.
And for Bitcoin, it was what, 50, right? Not one.
Well, for Bitcoin, it was very strong, more than 50% on specific occasions actually. So to tell you my experience from the May 6th flash crash, one of the key reasons why it happened is something called fragmentation of liquidity. In the US equity markets, you have 13 exchanges. So actually, when the liquidity spreads over the 13 exchanges, you have a lot of fragmentation, and then the markets are very vulnerable to crashes because you have toxic flow moving from one exchange to the other and just pushing the price lower and lower. This is one of the reasons why the May 6th flash crash happened in 2010. Let's look at the crypto markets. In crypto markets, you have more than 300 trading venues, all of them with their all fragmented liquidity. And that's why we have so many actually flash crashes in the crypto space, because when the toxic flow starts coming in, it gets spread across all of these 300 crypto trading venues. And it's very easy then actually to get a crash. So I think we have the extreme version of a very fragmented markets that we see in the US equities. In crypto space, it's literally insane. Let's say it like that.
Anton, now you've raised another topic that maybe we should have a special discussion on, which is, if we look at a 3 to 5 year horizon, right? We're talking about trading markets, you know, equities and the Bitcoin ETF. What is the impact of generative AI on trading and liquidity? Because we are going to have more bots, if you want, and more algorithmic trading than we currently have. right? And then we traditionally have, especially for these liquid assets like Bitcoin. So what is that going to do to the fragmentation and the flash crash propensity of these markets is a big question. And I'm sure that there are traders that will be modeling this because it is an extremely important topic, how it mm-hmm. will affect markets. I have your head spinning. Okay, shall we go to a few outrageous predictions? Here we are stealing Saxo Bank's annual outrageous predictions. We are retrofitting them to ourselves for the crypto market, right, Anton? Mm-hmm. So, you know, who starts?
I'll start, no problem.
Okay. Gentlemen first, go.
So my first outrageous prediction for 2024, which will fundamentally impact the crypto markets, is Coinbase is going to lose the lawsuit against the US regulator. So as we know, the US regulator, SEC, has sued Coinbase for many, many different reasons. And I anticipate that Coinbase will actually lose the lawsuit, which will actually have extreme consequences on their business model, on the exchange business, on the custody business, and also on their role in the launch of the spot Bitcoin ETF. Because Coinbase is the key custodian for most of the spot Bitcoin ETF issuers, and they're actually holding all the cryptos from the capital that comes into the spot Bitcoin ETF. And I think that will have fundamental consequences because it will be the fiduciary duty of the issuer of the spot Bitcoin ETF to mitigate the legal risk that will result from Coinbase losing the lawsuit. And there will be actually then a gap in the appropriate custodians for the spot Bitcoin ETF. And I think at that point, Wall Street will take some opportunities there. And if I would have to say how that gap will be filled, is we need to look at the big players. We need to look at the biggest player. JP Morgan will come in to the crypto industry as a custodian for the spot Bitcoin ETF. So this is my outrageous prediction.
And Jamie Dimon won't leave. He will stay as CEO while this is happening, right?
He will stay as the CEO. He will become the biggest custodian for crypto, and he will get a big fat bonus for doing that.
Hey,
Effie, what's your outrageous prediction?
Okay, I have two outrageous predictions. One is US-centric, and the other is not US-centric. The first one is that there are going to be two central banks in 2024 that publicly announce that they are acquiring Bitcoin for their reserves and self-custody because, let's admit it, after the war on Ukraine, and the fact that the U.S. froze the central bank reserves, the dollar central bank reserves of the central bank of Russia, self-sovereignty became really top of the mind. So I think that we will have two banks, probably one from Europe and one from, I don't know, the Middle East or Asia. That's one outrageous prediction. The second is, in 2024, one state in the U.S. will go independent and they will recognize Bitcoin as a currency. I'm not going to name the state. I leave people to guess which state it could be. And let's see. Any other outright prediction?
Just a second. Effie, I'm at the edge of my seat. So which two central banks and which U.S. state? You need to give us a hint at least.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be T for Texas. Okay.
Wow.
And I think that it is going to be the Swiss National Bank first. And then I expect some central bank from the Middle East. I don't know which one. You're closer to the Middle East. Can you help me on this one?
Wow. So first, I have to say, I'm really, this is amazing, outrageous predictions. And I think a very thoughtful one, because it's really kind of we're discussing sovereignty, decentralization, you know, and positioning ourselves in the future, right? I think your predictions are really amazing. They're outrageously amazing. And if I would have to say, like, to give a little bit of flavor, who could that be in the Middle East? In the Middle East, there is many times publicly a lot of talking, but the real things happen behind the scenes, you know? If I would have to kind of say who could be that first state, I would bet on the United Arab Emirates, who have been the leader in the crypto space for many years now. And if somebody needs to make the move and has the knowledge, the people, and the infrastructure to make that happen, I think this is UAE. And let's be specific, it would be Abu Dhabi, actually.
It would be Abu Dhabi. And let's be clear. The only way, like for retail, the only way to understand how Bitcoin works is to actually open your own wallet and buy a couple of Satoshis. And then you experience what that means. Send some to your relatives and friends. And as Jack Dorsey has said, every business should at least experiment with the open source technology of Bitcoin to understand how this works, because only then you can understand what is the potential for your business and for your ecosystem. And I think that holds for the central banks too. And it's absolutely necessary to adopt and start understanding what an open, what do you want to call it, payments system, an open peer-to-peer payment system is all about on a public ledger and so on.
May I make another one? The second one? Yeah. So my second prediction for 2024 will be that Elon Musk will issue a cryptocurrency. So we have all been seeing what he does, or what he's doing with Twitter, or today known as X. His big vision of making it a super app, so kind of equivalent to WeChat in China, where you can do literally everything within WeChat. Elon Musk has the same vision of creating a super app. He already communicated very publicly that he wants to make it also a payment application. He has also actually made steps in the direction to acquiring payment license in the US. And it's only natural and normal for his outrageous genius and for his outrageous thinking is actually to issue a crypto native asset, so a digital currency, a cryptocurrency that powers the X ecosystem. And I think turbocharge X as an application and actually bring it closer to billions of people more in the world. And if he doesn't take this opportunity in 2024, somebody else will take it. So I'm sure actually he's thinking about it, and you know, now is the time to do it.
And you're not talking about a stable coin like the paper.
No, I'm not talking about a stable coin. I'm talking about something crazier than even Dogecoin. So.
That only Elon Musk is capable of coming up with, correct?
Yes, that's only he can do something like that, actually, and make it a success.
Okay, our outrageous predictions are done, and 2024 is on a roll. And we will be accountable for this. At the end of 2024, we will come back and see if any of these happened or something in that direction for these to happen. And of course, then we'll have other outrageous predictions for 2025, because our world is in an outrageous state in a positive and in a negative way, right, Anton?
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of things always happening. And I really appreciate for the opportunity to make my outrageous predictions. Prediction is far difficult, especially in the future. But this was a lot of fun for me. And also it made me think a lot about, you know, where these, you know, big things can happen that can fundamentally change the world. And I'm also really loving your predictions. And let's hold ourselves accountable for 2024, but also with a bit of a positive spirit and a bit lively, because we're really shooting for the stars with some of these predictions.
And outrageous predictions are extremely useful to push our thinking, to push the boundaries of what we know and what we can incrementally sort of extrapolate from the current situations. You know, we can be talking about, oh, you know, the ETF, the volumes, the AUM and so on. Those are linear extrapolations, but we need to be thinking how this will impact the system and the economy as a whole, not only finance. Because we are at the heart of everything, right? Finance is at the heart of any economic activity. And so it's extremely important to understand how we're shaping all this. Thank you, Anton.
Thanks a lot, Effie. It was awesome. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at @Irish_TechNews, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.